breasts showing, holding the lights up. And that just seems like such a wonderful thing. In case you haven't seen those fixtures, Hollyhurst, when you walk in, just before you go up the stairs, turn to the left and find the restroom. They are something, those fixtures. That's one dream that won't come true. Speaking of dreams come true, one of the reasons you all are here is because you love the blues, I hope, or I think. Otherwise, I wouldn't think you'd be here. And I know that you all know all about what the blues is. I made a joke today on Ann, and she didn't even think it was a joke. She didn't laugh. I told her I was going to tell her about the blues tonight. I wouldn't be so presumptuous with folks who've decided to come and hang out just being involved with the blues. But I was told there are some young people here who don't fully understand, not that I fully understand it after all these years, but for whom it might be a good idea for me to go through some of those motions about the blues. And we passed out a piece of paper, which if anybody didn't get it, Carla has more of them, you can get them from her. It's a statement by John Dewey that I like, and it's for you to take home and meditate upon and think about, because, and it's not about the blues specifically at all, but it comes from his book that he wrote in 1934, Art as Experience, and it has to do with any form of art. And the main thing, one of the things that he talks about, he was this great educator and philosopher, and one of the things he talks about is rigid classifications. Now, you may or may not know, I'm a champion of the women. And the women have been treated very badly in books written about the blues, and those have all been written by men. A very big, important hotshot writer, Robert Palmer, who wrote Deep Blues, dismisses the women entirely of the 20s, the classic era, the golden period, when the blues queens were very important, and says they really weren't the real blues. The real blues started with Blind Lemon Jefferson, and thus dismisses them. They were showbiz. Well, I'm sorry for those who were in my classes earlier today. If I repeat some of these things, please bear with me. It was Bessie Smith who changed the blues from a folk expression to an art form, an American art form. She is the most important woman in the history of this blues, of this music, and the separation of what is and isn't blues. Is it blues? Is it gospel? Is it jazz? Is it soul? Is it rock and roll? Interests me very much, because I don't think we can make these distinctions so rigid. And that's one of the things on that little piece of paper John Dewey talks about. We lose too much in the transitions in trying to keep it rigid. So Robert Palmer may not think Bessie Smith was a true, genuine blues singer, but who is he anyhow? Just one man's opinion. Now, for you young people who are reading these books for the first time, these blues books, they're going to tell you in those books lots of places that the blues came from. and they'll talk about field hollers. And I don't know how they write these books in quite the way they do. I've tried to figure it out. But the implication always is that those are men hollering in the field, that the women weren't in the fields doing the work, but it was the men and they were doing the hollering and the field hollers. Now, those women who were picking all that cotton and doing all that hard work, I'm sure gave out plenty of shouts. So I don't know how they do it quite. Now, and then they'll tell you that it comes from, the blues comes from the hammering and the nailing down of the rails for the railroad. Well, I agree, the women didn't do that work. But, and they talk about the prison gangs. But I don't agree that women didn't do that work, because women did, and many women were in prison. And I issued my Rosetta Records label an album some years ago called Jailhouse Blues, which were blues that women sang in the Parchment Penitentiary, the worst prison this country ever has known, and the Department of Archives and History in the state of Mississippi engaged me to do that work. And I studied the Library of Congress recordings that were made there in 1936. And these women were singing the blues a cappella. And I went through a lot of that material and looked into a lot of that history. Women were in chain gangs. Women were digging out, digging in the earth with shovels while they were in chain gangs. And people were so shocked when they heard that there was this album, Jailhouse Blues, and it was women. Women were in jail, especially in the 30s, for being prostitutes. You see that in their songs. You hear that in their songs. And they sing such terrible things that you can't, I mean, it's so hard to believe it, but it was true. If you can't give me a dollar, I'll take a lousy dime. Things were so bad in the 30s, and imagine being arrested for that. So women certainly were in jail. So as far as where the blues comes from, no one in any of the books I've ever read have talked about my placenta theory. And you can laugh, and it's as valid as any stevedores lifting bales of cotton for shipping, because when the mother is rocking and that baby's inside her and she's sitting in the church and she's shouting, that's as good a way as any that I know to get all that blues rhythm. And until a baby's old enough to sit in its own seat, the mother's still holding it and rocking it in church and rocking it to breastfeed and lullaby. Now, any single book has discussed this, but I'm going to put it in my book. So, as far as where the blues comes from, no matter what they say in the books, there's only one place, and that is the church, the black church. That's where it came from first. And everything else in the cotton fields and wherever they were, they got it from the church first. So that, I know all of you real grown-ups know that, but this is for the younger people. And I'm going to show, as I told you, my interest is, what is it, blues, gospel, jazz, and so on. And I'm going to show a little video, only 3 minutes, of the International Sweethearts of Rhythm as the second one, which uses blues, traditional blues lines, but it comes out swing. And I think that's a very interesting combination. It's also interesting that it's a woman's jazz band. And when the men were away, they let the women play, like Rosie the Riveter. This was in the early 1940s. And the traditional lines have a lot of meaning for me, because when they are repeated, and you hear them in many different songs when people heard them, it gave them comfort. There was a familiarity about it. The first time I heard Billie Holiday sing a blues song, I was a teenager, and she sang, "Love is like a faucet, it turns off and on." And I thought, oh, isn't she brilliant? What a poetic, beautiful way that is. And then later, when I got really interested in this material as a grown-up, Ida Cox sang that in 1924. Then I found five or six other women who had sung it too. No one claims traditional lines. They keep getting repeated because they're so good and so comforting and speak so much. For example, "My Daddy Rocks Me With One Steady Roll." That's a song that has, oh, there are maybe 15 or 20 versions that I know of. Sometimes it's called something else, like "Rock Me," or the title is changed a little. But if your daddy is rocking you with one steady roll, that's something to celebrate. If he's not, then it's a great fantasy to have. Or if somebody's rocking you. Anyhow, it works. It's worked in this music, in the literature. Now, the thing is, the blues is trying to tell us something. And I know that you grown-ups all know this, but I'm just going to repeat it just to underline some of my jab. The most common traditional line that you all know is "woke up this morning," which is telling you a story. It's telling you the condition that they're going to discuss or sing about. Maybe "the blues all around my bed," which is a common next line. But it is a very specified form of communicating. And it's like "once upon a time" is the same thing as "woke up this morning." They're the same kinds of expression, that they have the same kinds of meaning. And everything's going to be all right. The end of a song, "they lived happily ever after." So it is another culture's way of telling the story. And I know that you all know about the 12-bar blues and the AAB, first line statement, second line repeat, third resolve or expand. But what about 16-bar blues? Is that not blues, or 8-bar blues, or some other kind? So that's where our friend Mr. Dewey comes in. We can't be rigid. Now, the first little video I'm going to show you is a soundie. We went over this afternoon, and everybody said they wouldn't be bored if they heard it again tonight. Soundies are 3-minute little films. They existed from 1941 to 1947, only 6 years. When you put a nickel in the Nickelodeon or the jukebox, you got the play of a 78 RPM record. If you were lucky enough to find a soundie machine, also known as a Panoram, you put in a dime, and you got a little screen like this that showed what was playing on the record. They were the precursors of MTV. And this first one that I'm showing you is really putting the question, is it blues, is it gospel, is it jazz? We have Sister Rosetta Tharpe is singing "Lonesome Road," a gospel song. She is backed by Lucky Millinder and his band, a very hot swinging band who was most popular at the Savoy Ballroom for Lindy Hop dancers. But it's got a blues beat. So what is it? I don't know, you figure it out. It's great. Now, Sister Rosetta Tharpe was the first person to put gospel on the stage. In 1938, she got a lot of flack for it from the sisters in the church, the brothers in the church. She had to leave the Pentecostal church because they considered it was a sacrilege for her to make this music public. It was private prayer. And it gave her a very hard time. Her attitude was, wherever you find them, if you know, it'll do them good, if it's in a church or in a club. And so she has a voice that just, it's like 24 angels are in there shouting out. And however, she's wearing a suit. Now, why, this is 1941, why is she wearing a suit? Why isn't she wearing a gown as women, and as they called them, band girls wore in front of a, you know, with a little cleavage showing and certainly some arms. She wanted to be considered a serious musician wearing her suit of clothes like the musicians were. Also, this is just after the Deep Depression, the very hard depression. Women were not yet going to work and wearing suits. Suits were a thing that college girls wore. And really poor people didn't have the money to have two pieces for a girl that went together. So it was a pride, with pride, that she was wearing a suit instead of a, yeah, you know, some kind of a sexy thing. Well, the producers didn't think that was sexy. And after all, it's a 3-minute film. They have to have some sex in there, right? Can't just stand with this fabulous voice. Oh, and this great band, it's not enough. So they bring in the dancing girls. Well, here are the dancing girls to Lonesome Road. It doesn't make sense. Then the girls are decapitated at one point, and you just see the hips and the torsos. It is so nutty, it is so silly, it is so dumb. But what are we going to do? That's what we have. That is our history. And so I think it's important to see how these things evolved and took shape. And, well, take a look. Oh.
Before you travel on.
anybody could figure out the answer, what is it? Let me know. I can't figure it out.
We needed a couple to show the new Lindy steps.
Yeah, right. They were good, weren't they?
What's the name of the singer?
Sister Rosetta Tharpe, gospel singer.
Wow. And great piano player. I mean, the great guitar.
Guitar player. I wish I had a video of her doing guitar. The problem with getting these film clips is you can't always get the things that you want. And, you know, they didn't always make them. If they would have had her playing the guitar there instead of the dancing girls, would have been of more interest to me, but I guess the ones that had the power and were doing it thought that was necessary for the selling. Well, it's okay.
Okay. That. That should be. Right. Ha! Oh, come on.
She's
making me work too hard.
No, I'll move around it.
How's that?
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much, Joan. Appreciate that. I'm a little hoarse tonight. Now, let's see what we're talking about. I had such an important thought there a second ago. Sister Rosetta Tharpe?
I think a lot of people haven't heard of her.
Oh, well, I told a little bit about how she was considered a sacrilege that she did that.
But that, you know, how she continued, how well-known she was.
She was very well-known, very big. Mm-hmm. Traveled in Europe, made recordings in Europe. Has so many... What?
Where was she from?
I think Baltimore. When she married in a huge church in Washington, D.C., and charged $2. It's such a wonderful idea because her mother was a great gospel singer, and so I believe it was her aunt. And as soon as she was tall enough to stand up by herself and hold her mother's hand in the church, she was singing. So she, they used to take her around to all the churches and stand her up on a table. She was so extraordinary, a singer. And they traveled, and that's one of the ways her mother made a living for years, traveling around with Sister Rosetta, singing in the neighborhood churches for what they got when the hat was passed around. You don't know what I've got in my bag, or you wouldn't want me to keep on with Sister Rosetta Tharpe. Because I do want to cover a little more material. The next group I want to show, because people are not used to seeing an all-women's jazz band, and they use the traditional blues lines, traditional blues phrases, as I mentioned, and it comes out swing. And I think that's an interesting kind of a combination. These women started playing in the Piney Woods Country School, which was in Mississippi, for poor orphans and unwanted children who were of mixed races, that is, half Chinese, half black, half everything and half black. There were a lot of mulattoes. And it was a working school where you worked to earn your keep and pay for the schooling. And it was a farm situation, and everybody had their chores. Well, Clifton Jones, who was the man who ran the school, had heard Ina Ray Hutton and her Melodeers on the radio, and she was very successful, And Phil Spitalning is all-girl orchestra every Sunday night on the Camel Caravan. So they had a girls' band, and he turned the girls' band, because they had the boys' band and the girls' band. The girls' band from Piney Woods turned it into a girls' orchestra type thing, and they used stock arrangements and went around within a small radius to raise money for the school. Well, they were such proper girls, and with their Buster Brown shoes and navy blue skirts and white midi blouses, people were just happy to come around from the neighborhoods within 5, 10, 20 miles and so on. They were raising more money for the school than any of the other groups. And this is a tradition of us black schools. The Fisk Jubilee Singers raised a lot of money for Fisk College by going about and singing. Anyhow, this band got pretty good. And so they brought in Eddie Durham, who was a trumpet player and did arrangements for Count Basie to be the coach and coached them. And they brought in Jesse.